Hello and welcome to the debate. I'm Kaba Tahwai. Bahrain has sentenced opposition figure Sheikh Salman to life in prison. 7 years after the revolution in Bahrain, the regime is still intimidated by peaceful opposition figures. In this edition of the debate, we will examine why the regime feels threatened after all these years, or whether it is getting its directives from its big brother, Saudi Arabia.
No end to the crackdown in Bahrain. Bahrain's appeal court has sentenced opposition figure Sheikh Ali Salman, as well as two other prominent opposition figures, to life in prison for allegedly spying for Qatar. The ruling against Sheikh Ali Salman came after the appeal court overturned a previous verdict that acquitted him of the charge. The cleric denies all accusations leveled against him by the regime, including espionage charges. The life sentence handed to Salman has been met with strong criticism from rights organizations and activists. Amnesty International has described it as a travesty of justice. Al-Wafaq movement, that was led by Sheikh Ali Salman before his imprisonment, has also condemned the verdict, saying that it has once again showed that Bahrain's judiciary is dominated by the Al-Khalifa regime. It said the ruling will further strengthen the Bahraini people's resistance. The repressive tactics by the Bahraini regime have changed over time since the pro-democracy movement began in the Persian Gulf Kingdom in 2011. It has sometimes used violence and sometimes torture in jail, and now handing lengthy prison sentences in what rights groups have called show trials. But all these methods have been about one goal: silencing dissent.
In the case of Sheikh Ali Salman and his colleague, it is so clear that when the public prosecutors didn't give any further additional evidence to change the verdicts from the initial court, which was that he should be freed, but suddenly now the appeal court changed it to life sentences. So it is give a clear indication that it is a revenge and it is a political verdicts more than to be a justice.
Well, our guest joining us for this edition of the debate, we have Professor of Sociology at the American University of Cairo, Saeed Sadeq, who joins us from Cairo. We also have a former U.S. diplomat, Michael Springman, who joins us from Washington, D.C. Gentlemen, welcome. Michael Springman, let me first start with you. You know, we are looking at this movement that morphed into a revolution based on the date or the year 2011. And at this point, we're looking at 7 years down the road that the sentence with this opposition figure, Sheikh Ali Salman, and two of his comrades for being sentenced to life in prison. Why are the officials in Bahrain so intimidated by opposition figures, such as the three that they have sentenced in this case? Michael Springman?
Well, in my view, they're so intimidated because the people who are asking for freedom, who are asking for democracy, who are asking for a realistic system of government, know full well that the Al-Khalifa regime can't abide that. The Al-Khalifa regime exists only on the basis of its military force, its import of force from outside, such as Saudi Arabia back in 7 years ago in 2011, and the government there in Bahrain, if you can style it a government, knows it full well that it cannot allow even the slightest bit of change in its dictatorial regime for fear of complete overthrow and replacement with something that is something other than a travesty of justice and freedom. It will be a real government, a government of democracy to an extent, or greater or lesser. And this is what these people can't abide. They have this hold on power, and they know that they give an inch. If we like the French Revolution, it'll be a wave of freedom fighters wiping out the monarchy and introducing a brand new and entirely different system of government.
Saeed Sadeq, do you agree with that assessment that Michael Springman made, that if there are at all any hopes of any type of talks, then that's conceding somewhat of giving room for more opposition to occur and for perhaps lead to demands being met that the regime there just is not going to open the doors for that type of event to take place, development to take place?
Well, we have to look at the Bahraini situation from a regional perspective. The Arab Spring had a big setback. All of the Arab countries that went through the revolution had also encountered a very strong counter-revolution wave. If you look at Bahrain, you cannot isolate Bahrain from its regional neighborhood, the Gulf states, despite the fact that it is one of the poorest among its oil-rich neighbors. It enjoys support from the United States. It has a base of the American Fifth Fleet. It is supported by Gulf Shield. So the system, the regime in Manama cannot be changed easily with some demonstration and opposition here and there. And we have seen the aborting of the revolution in Bahrain in 2011. Like any many revolutions in the area also faced trouble. So you cannot look at the situation also without taking into consideration the fact that most of the Arab states and most of the neighbors in the area are not, you know, model for democracy. If you look at Freedom House, when they classify countries, free countries, not free, most of the Arab world, 22 Arab states, are not free. The only one free is Tunisia. The partially free, you can talk about Morocco and Lebanon. The Gulf states are not democratic states, and I don't think democracy, human rights, and oil mix. There is an interest in keeping this area under authoritarian rule because the American establishment, the Western imperialist endeavor and interest do not want democracy and human rights in the area. And so I am not surprised that after 7 or 8 years you have development like that. These are just details of the major picture that the whole area is falling into a sea of authoritarianism.
Okay, so I think Michael Springman, our guest there, probably nailed it when he says that these are regimes that don't want democracy, don't want opposition to their rule, and therefore that is why the situation in Bahrain has continued in terms of a crackdown. And if tell us if you agree with that, and of course at the same time, you're having the U.S. That, for example, claims that stands for everything against that, but yet has all these countries, many of them, to be its allies, like Saudi Arabia, for example. This is for Michael Springman. Go
following.
Ahead.
Well, yes, indeed.
In
the United States supports Saudi Arabia. It supports Bahrain.
Go ahead, Michael Springman.
Yeah, well, I think I just continue on with that thought that you would have a line of falling dominoes if you had any kind of freedom in Bahrain. The whole line would topple all along the Gulf Coast. You know, you've got the Emirates, you've got Kuwait, you've got Saudi Arabia. How long could each of them remain free if somebody points to Bahrain and says, look, there was a democratic revolution there. The people are far better off than they were under the Al-Khalifa regime. Let's have something like this at home. So these people are backed by the repressive governments of Britain and the United States. They're given weapons. They are given political support. And deathly fear reality intruding.
Well, Saeed Sadegh, given the fact that this length of time has passed and the opposition is still there, protests still continue, and it still is somewhat disruptive when it comes to Bahrain, and given the size, the small size that it has, and the disruptions that perhaps it incurs on its business image, you would think that if they spent the last 7 years cracking down on dissent, that if perhaps they had talked with the opposition, there would have been, it probably would have been eliminated if there was some kind of agreement that would have been reached. But they don't want that to happen. Are the decision makers in Bahrain, or is it coming perhaps from Saudi Arabia?
Well, we have to understand that the Bahraini opposition has a social base.
Said Sadek, I'm sorry, Michael Springman. Said Sadek, go ahead.
Okay. As I mentioned, there is a social base for the Bahraini opposition, and that's why it doesn't end, because you cannot eliminate 65% of the population. So it's not that easy. You need a political solution, not a military, police, intelligence solution. So this is very important. Secondly, back again to the regional international dimension of the Bahraini crisis, is that the neighbors also do not want instability in Bahrain, and they think that any democratization in Bahrain can also affect them. And that's why they were taking an action against the Arab Spring in general in many countries. And again, as I mentioned, the Americans also do not want a real democracy. Remember in 2011, King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia warned the President Obama that if Bahrain falls, the rest of the Gulf states would also fall like domino. And that's why he approved and gave a green light for the Gulf military intervention, the Gulf Shield in Manama, and ending this uprising. Nowadays, what is the future of the Bahraini opposition? You cannot de-link it from the regional development and the situation in the area. Take into consideration that before 2011, most of the areas, most of the countries in the area were stable. Today, everybody in the area is very unstable. Saudi Arabia in 2018 is not the same like in 2010. Bahrain the same. Most of the area is now going into turmoil. Gestation of a new regional order is emerging in the area, and that also would affect the internal situation in Bahrain. How can you allow the opposition to take over when the regional powers do not want any change in the area today? And that's why it's not as easy as people imagine.
Well, what we're looking at, Michael Springman, are in the case of Bahrain, the United States and the UK, both which have naval bases in this tiny Persian Gulf island. And at the same time, you're looking at the way that authorities in Bahrain have cracked down on the opposition, how they have jailed protesters, etc. How much of a responsibility do you think they have had in terms of either not acting to prevent this from happening, or by looking the other way, actually giving a green light for the Bahraini authorities to go ahead with what they have been doing up to this point?
Well, it is full responsibility for the United States and Britain. Without their shield, without their ships, without their soldiers, Bahrain would have had a regime change a long time ago. You've got, in fact, the Americans are so stretched thin now that the general staff at the Pentagon is saying we can't put any more soldiers and any more ships into the Persian Gulf because we don't have the forces to do it. So I think that the Bahrainis had better consider their future very carefully. Sooner or later, there will be regime change in the United States and in Britain. And they will not always be supportive of repressive, brutal governments like Bahrain, like Saudi Arabia, and like the rest of the Gulf states. So eventually, the situation will change. Unfortunately, it's not moving fast enough. But if you ever get a government in the United States that sees clearly its interest in foreign affairs and see how its interests are being poisoned by support of repressive states like Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states, in particular Bahrain, I think that there will be a great sea change in the area.
Well, we keep hearing this change, Said Sadek. You talked about a new regional order that is happening right now. And you mentioned how Saudi Arabia, this 2018, is not the same as the Saudi Arabia back in 2010. What is this change that you're talking about? What have you seen?
Well, you can see, first of all, the old animosity toward Israel that existed before 2011 is changing regionally. You have now alliances emerging between Gulf State, Israel, the United States. There is also alliance against Turkey, against Iran. There is more intervention, military intervention, than before 2010. We have many now ongoing civil wars. Actually, they are civil wars, but supported and patronized by foreign powers, like the war in Syria, the war in Yemen, the tension that exists in many Arab countries, the chaos in Libya. So what we are seeing today is a gestation of a new regional alliances and a new regional order emerging. The boycott and the economic war on Iran, you cannot isolate it from all those regional developments. There is something that is being cooked in the area, and it is not clear yet where is the final situation. For example, before the killing of Jamal Khashoggi, you had the alliance of Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Emirates, and Bahrain against Qatar, Iran, and Turkey. Today, this had been shaken by this assassination. Just one incident is affecting the regional alliance, but is it over or is something else is emerging? You have seen warm statements regarding Qatar coming from the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia and Egyptian President Sisi. This is also new development. Is it going to develop and Qatar is reintegrated and taking back or the Gulf Cooperation Council that had almost collapsed with the crisis with Qatar back again or not? Not clear. And that's why I said that the area is in a state of gestation, and something new will emerge in the end.
Well, the thing with Khashoggi, I guess, needs to be expanded, Michael Springman, into the regional dynamics, because this developing story, obviously all the fingers are pointing towards the higher-ups in the kingdom of Saudi Arabia. And of course, bin Salman is the one that is under the spotlight here. What bin Salman has done, even though it is still a monarchy there, by allowing the freedom to come into the kingdom, that will start a trend with the general population. General population is going to have more demands when it comes to having their voices heard. So therefore, do you think that will spill over somehow into Bahrain? Because you have countries like the U.S. and the U.K. that, well, they supported Saudi Arabia. At this point, we're assuming they're going to continue that trend. But don't you think that that should spill over onto Bahrain also?
I would think so. I mean, Mohammed bin Salman is making superficial changes in Saudi Arabia, such as allowing women to drive, promoting the idea of having movie theaters, presumably with men and women both attending. You've got minuscule steps, not even baby steps, towards a Western viewpoint there. So I think if you give the Saudis, who are traveled outside the country and see the rest of the world and then travel back home and see a little bit of change, a little bit more liberalization, I think you're going to see more and more demands for this. I mean, you give somebody a taste of improvements, of better things, they're going to want more and more. And since Saudi Arabia is separated only from Bahrain by a causeway, I think that the whole thing will change. You've got Saudis traveling into Bahrain back and forth. And Bahrain is a bit more liberal than Saudi Arabia, at least it used to be. So I can see that a little bit of change here and a little bit of change there in Saudi Arabia will have a big effect on Bahrain and its isolation and its strenuous efforts to keep itself inside its own little bubble.
Well, Said Sadeq, at the same time, the opposition has continued in Bahrain. This obviously shows that it's not going to end. What options do Bahrainis have in having their voices to be heard and to pave the way in any shape or form to, get some of the rights that they've demanded for such a long period of time?
As you know, why we had the Arab Spring in the first place? We had the Arab Spring in the first place because there was no peaceful channels for change and reform. Gaddafi, for example, in Libya had been ruling the country from 1969 until 2011. President Mubarak in Egypt ruled the country for 30 years, and there were many demands for change and reform, but nothing happened, and so the only option was revolution. The same in Tunisia, 23 years of rule, and there was no response except a revolution. So anybody who criticized revolution, this was the only option after people were so patient. The same in Bahrain, people have been patient. They are writing reform, calling for reforms. There was a revolution that was aborted. So what can the opposition do now? The only option for them, because they have to take into consideration the regional balance of power, the interests of the United States, the American military base, the naval base that exists in Bahrain, they have to continue raising awareness, pushing for reform, hoping that in the future something may happen. But for the time being, I don't think a revolution is possible in Bahrain, taking into consideration the current regional balance of power.
And Michael Springman, do you think that the U.S. will in any shape or form try to push either Saudi Arabia or Bahrain in particular to have some kind of opposition talks to occur, or to have at least some compromise being made with the people there in Bahrain in order for them to see some rights?
Regrettably not. The United States did nothing in 2011 when the Saudis invaded Bahrain to put down the beginnings of democratic revolution. It's the United States that has not come out clearly against Saudi Arabia and the murder of Jamal Khashoggi in the Turkish consulate, the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, Turkey, when he went in for a routine piece of paper attesting to his divorce. So if they haven't done anything about that, I don't see them doing anything in the near future or even in the middle term future, unless there is a great change in American government, that the deep state is finally pushed to one side, and the militarists and the Zionists and the neocons are completely out of power. And I would love to see that happen, but I don't see that happening anytime soon or even in the middle or the long term, if you want to stretch it out that far. I think that the only way to get rid of these people is to change the American and British governments and get them to fully support their words with deeds supporting democracy, supporting justice, supporting freedom. And I don't see that happening anytime soon.
Thank you very much for that. We're going to end it there. Professor of Sociology at the American University of Cairo, Said Sadek, spoke to us from Cairo, and former U.S. diplomat Michael Springman, who spoke to us from Washington, D.C. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. For me, Kavita Wei, and entire team in the capital, Tehran, is goodbye.